Thanks for listening to this podcast of Trending with Timmeray from the Relevant Radio app. Anything you share in terms of episodes, whether it's texting it to a friend, posting on social media, helps to build up the kingdom for God, to help confront the challenging issues we face as a culture, but with joy, with hope, and with an eternal perspective where our faith collides with everyday life, bringing eternal principles to help us live our life joyfully.
So, what's trending? Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timmeray on Relevant Radio.
Are you healing from a divorce? Licensed marriage and family therapist Joe Socorro joined me taking your questions, everything from divorce, dating, and raising kids to marriage. So what are you struggling with? We'd love to talk to you. Give us a call. Our toll-free line is 888-914-9149, and it's sponsored by Catholic Order of Foresters Life Insurance. A little later on, we'll take your questions and also take up this question, whether you've struggled with miscarriage and have lost children via miscarriage, or you're facing the challenge of infertility. What does it mean to be open to life, as the church calls us to, when bringing life into the world can be so challenging? Where's the line in terms of a medical intervention? And I'm not just talking the problems with in vitro fertilization and surrogacy, but how hard do you try? How hard do you continue to go back to the doctor time and time again to solve the puzzle of the challenges surrounding infertility and miscarriage? We'll take that question up in a little bit, along with a great quote I saw from St. Fidelis, whose feast day it is today, discussing how to be a soldier and serving Christ, and just inspiring words for our journey as we follow our faith, and really strive to be in union with our Lord and truly serve Him. But before we dive into all of that, Joe Socorro is with me today, and the topic of divorce is one that, whether you've been through a divorce yourself, or maybe you have a friend or family member who's navigating this season, and it can be such a challenging season, from the pain of the divorce to everything from the shame, especially if you're Catholic, that shame of people seeing what's happened, the shame of the fact that there's no such thing as divorce within the Catholic Church. There's an annulment where the church declares, if taking a deep dive into looking at your marriage, that perhaps there was never a marriage to begin with. Whatever the circumstances are, whether your marriage has been annulled, you're going through the annulment process, you need to start it, or perhaps you're having to live separate lives and you're legally separated while still remaining to the fact that you are being faithful to the fact that you are married in the eyes of the church. All of those circumstances merit the challenge and the necessity for healing. And with Christ, healing is that bedrock to rediscover your identity in the face of wounds. And so joining me today is licensed marriage and family therapist, Joe Socorro. Joe, welcome back to Trending.
So it was so nice to be with you. And this is such an important topic. Thank you for bringing this up and your willingness to talk about it. You know, divorce is so complicated. I always go back to the prophet Malachi, who says, God says, I hate divorce. And it's so stark. And the truth is, God says, I hate divorce because it causes so much pain if you go through it. I always say, yes. And everybody who goes through a divorce, a loss of a relationship, that breaking up of that union, also hates divorce. And there's a lot of pain, but it's really important to know that healing is possible. And I'd love to talk about some of the themes. My greatest concern, Timmeray, is that there's so much to say about how to move forward, how to restore that life. I thought, okay, this might have to be like a two-part series we do here on this, but we should start where we are and get into understanding how to actually begin that healing process. And I think the best way is to really start by saying, how do you understand grief? Because in a sense, when you experience a divorce, you're experiencing that loss of a life that you knew, that life that you hoped would continue. And everything is gone then. And so there's a real grieving aspect to it, to understanding grief. And I think that's the place to actually begin. And that's no easy thing to understand grief, but I would like to begin with that.
I think that is so poignant, especially if you look at this culture that's spinning when it comes to this whole idea of identity, because there really is a loss of identity. You've stepped into this identity as a married person. You have this new relationship that has now ended, however short or long it may have been. And so that understanding of yourself and going through that process of grief, let's dive in. So where do you begin with understanding grief and beginning that process?
Well, I think you begin by understanding how complicated it actually is. I go back to the book of Job, wonderful book in the Old Testament, right? Most people are kind of familiar with it. Job has everything, a wife, a family, riches, everything else. And then he loses everything, right? We won't go into the whole why that happens, how that happens, but he loses everything. And then what happens is Job's friends come along and say, they try to explain why he lost everything. And with a divorce, it's important to try to understand why did we lose this? How did it happen? And we begin to create a narrative that isn't necessarily true, a narrative about ourselves, a narrative about life, a narrative about God, that we've been abandoned. And in the end of the book of Job, you know, God says, Job, where were you when I created the heavens and the earth? Where were you when I created, you know, and he goes on and on. And I think the answer is this, is that we've got to stop trying to look for the easy answers. Sometimes we have to make peace and say, I just don't know. But at that point, when we recognize that we don't know, that we don't have all the answers, that's when we call out to God, like the psalmist says in Psalm 61, you know, God, hear my cry. I call, my heart grows faint. And that's what you feel like. That's understanding grief as that faintness of heart, that difficulty. But that's when we're called to call, that's when we're called to reach out to God and say, I don't get this. I don't understand this. What are the answers? And we have to kind of be okay with initially saying, I don't know, and that's okay.
And isn't that so hard in accepting, I don't get why this happened, whether you've been abandoned, whether you've made a mistake, whatever those circumstances are, here you are, you found yourself in them. And you know, just that humility that is so painful, Joe.
Yeah, yeah. There's all kinds of difficult and unexpected emotions when you go through a divorce, you know, from shock and anger and disbelief and guilt and profound sadness. And I guess the question is, you know, what do you do with that? We know that when Jesus was facing his imminent crucifixion and he was praying, and scripture says, depending on the translation you're looking at, but understanding, he was drugged with grief. I mean, he bled, you know, basically blood. He came from his body. It was such this deep, deep emotion. And I think that's a great place to begin, is that your emotional experience when you are going through that profound loss and you don't understand it all is to know that you have a God who can identify with your pain. And that's so important, because a lot of times when we're really suffering, one of the things that contributes to that suffering is this sense of being all alone. You know, nobody gets me, nobody understands me. And that's understandable. But we have to go back and by faith recognize that the Lord himself experienced such great grief and loss and despair that he can identify with our own pain. And I think that's a great place to begin.
And I'll put a little pin mark there for a moment, because that is the very challenge, especially if you're a person of faith or you're Catholic, or maybe everyone in your family has stayed married. And so there's that shame that comes as well with people either knowing the details or you're feeling like that relationship's been a failure. And so having that understanding that while other people may or may not understand, or perhaps they've been there but have been in very different circumstances, that Christ himself has taken on that pain and understands that grief is a very, I think, profound place to begin in recognizing I am never alone. As difficult as it is, as you said, Joe, to recognize I can't quite understand this. It's not possible to entirely.
Yeah, it's that you're absolutely right. That is the place to begin, is to really believe, to enter into that place of saying, I'm not alone in this grief. You know, God understands this kind of pain. Of course, Jesus didn't get married and divorced, but he understands that sense of loss and grief. And I think that's so often what people experience. You know, I fight as a marriage and family therapist with couples when I'm working with couples to try to help them restore that loving relationship. And that in itself is a huge challenge and a journey. But when you go through and you try everything that you can, let's say, and most people, when they get married, you know, whether you're Catholic or Christian or not, most people, when they get married, they kind of enter it with the idea, most people again, that this is it. I believe in this. I believe I'm making the right decision. I love this person. I feel loved. And when it goes wrong, our whole story, our narrative about ourselves and life gets uprooted. And then you've got to say, now what? And I think you got to move to that place where you've got to learn how to manage those painful emotions. And I go back to this. There's a lot of things that we've got to do to manage painful emotions. And when I think about that, you know, off the subject here, just briefly, a friend of mine that I used to work with as a police officer just a week ago committed suicide. And I was just shocked, right? Now, we're not talking about suicide. But I was just shocked because one of the things I thought is, wow, this was this great, great guy. I mean, a great cop, joyful, wonderful. Sorry. But we didn't see it. Nobody saw it, right? You didn't see that pain because he had this inside pain. And I think that brings me to this next place, which is when you feel that kind of devastation, you feel that kind of loss, you've got to reach out to that community or form a bigger community if you don't feel like you've got it, because you can't live alone in that kind of pain, because we can hide it. There is no hiding from God, but we can hide that pain. But you've got to share it. Otherwise, it can just go down a very dark road.
So you're saying that's the next step. You first start by understanding, how do you understand grief? You stop trying to look at the answers to it and to understand why and what happened. And you start to see that God himself understands that pain. He himself took on the pain, the sin of the world, but he also went through such immense suffering. As you mentioned, he literally sweat blood. And from there, you're mentioning starting to name it and start to discuss it with people. But who do you go to? I think that's the challenge for a lot of people, because some people just say, hey, celebrate your divorce. You're better off without that person. Or maybe they make it about them and start discussing their own divorce that they've been through. How do you choose that person to start sharing a little bit of your grief with?
Well, that's a great question. And again, it's not that eventually you don't do a deeper dive to try to understand what happened and everything else. But at first, you've got to just say, I have all these deep emotions. And then, yes, as you reach out to people, you know, it's so important, and it's natural in a sense. We're meant to live in community. God created us to be with one another, to share each other's burdens. But I think you've got to recognize, first of all, one person isn't necessarily going to have the answer for you. You know, you've got to find your friend that you can just say, I just need you to listen, or I just need you to grieve with me. And maybe there's a different person that you say, I'm struggling so much, I need to go out and have fun. I need to go play. I need to climb a mountain. And maybe there's another person that you can reach out to and say, I need your prayers. I need that kind of spiritual support. So don't look for that one thing from that you think you're going to get. But recognize that when you go through this kind of grief, and you and I have talked about this in other circumstances, that the brain has a negativity bias. And what happens when you're feeling lost and bereft and struggling and angry and all these emotions, you know, sometimes the brain is going to lock onto that. That's that brain's negativity bias. It's hard to get out of that loop sometimes. And sometimes you have to begin by saying, wait a second, I'm really stuck right now. Who can help me to move beyond this stuckness, you know, this difficulty, this darkness, so that I can see the light? And that's where I always talk about Paul's letter to the Philippians in chapter 4, which he says, you know, and I'm just paraphrasing, whatever is true and noble and good and right and things to praise, focus on these things. So it's always a balance when you feel this loss and this grief. Sometimes you have to say, wait a second, what is the positive? It's not just like trying to shoo away difficult emotions, like, don't worry about it, life will be good. No, feel the emotion, name the emotion, but then find that place where you're also able to say, wait a second, let me recognize the blessings of my life. Let me force myself to see what is good and true and beautiful, as Paul speaks about in Philippians chapter 4.
So embracing those fun, playful elements in life, those rediscovering those things you enjoy, but also seeing who can help me move beyond this grief while still acknowledging the pain and the emotions that are there and moving through them, which, Joe, I think is such a challenge for our culture today. People don't recognize, okay, I'm feeling sad, and allow themselves to feel the sorrow, whether it's a loss of a friend or family member, as you mentioned, your friend recently, whether it's the loss of someone in divorce or a child. How do you be a little more in tune with those emotions they're experiencing, allowing them to happen and allowing yourself to walk through them?
Well, that too is a great question. And I think, there's a big fancy word that I like to throw around when I want to sound smart. And it's called alexithymia. And basically what it means is an inability to identify what it is that you're feeling. And it's a challenge. More men experience this than women, but it's sometimes it takes practice to say, hey, what is going on with me right now? What am I feeling? You know, I seem to be irritable, but what is it? What's behind it? And just naming that feeling again, it's like, wow, right now I'm sad. Or right now I'm angry, or right now I'm feeling hopeless. Just naming that actually helps you to grow in that capacity to understand what it is you're feeling and then naming it. And just naming it, it sounds funny, but just naming an emotion sometimes allows you a little bit of separation from just feeling it, you know, on an unconscious level or conscious level. But naming the emotion actually allows you to begin to get beyond it, to say, wow, this is sadness. Not I am just sad, but this is sadness that I'm experiencing. This isn't the totality of me. This isn't, you know, what defines me is the sadness, but this is just sadness. This is something that I'm experiencing right now. And it moves it into a different part of the brain, a brain where you not only just feel, but you can think about that emotion. And that in itself can actually be very, very helpful.
It's funny, Joe, we have this very emotive culture when it comes to emojis. And a lot of people will throw emojis out in text messaging, but it's actually really helpful to take a chart. You can find them online very easily, and they're little faces. One is you're scared, sad, happy, angry, excited, worried, all of these different emotions, whether it's surprised, silly, frustrated, or giddy. And I found that that actually can be very helpful for seeing the word and kind of seeing that face of like, okay, like you said, I'm not sad, but I'm experiencing sadness, and that can help you work through, or even anger. I am feeling angry, but I don't have to be angry and lashing out at people. I don't have to be fretful in how I interact. And even just seeing, I think those charts can really help in those moments where you're flooded and you're not getting out of that rut, to start to move beyond that experience.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, if you ever text me and I send an emoji back, it'll make no sense. Because I like to throw people off. So, how are you doing, Joe? And I'll send back a picture of a canoe. what? But yeah, you're right. I think that can be helpful. I was thinking when you were saying that, you know, when you go into a hospital and they say, you know, what's your pain level? They always put up this emoji, mm-hmm. like, you know, a smiley face or a sort of a medium face or a grumpy face, right? You know, and so sometimes, yeah, just looking at it and naming it is actually something really helpful. But that's a challenge. It's not easy, because a lot of times with emotions, you know, we like to simplify things. We like to say, oh, right now I'm feeling angry or sad, but they're mixed up. You know, sometimes we feel all kinds of different emotions. So naming it can be a great thing and a start and a place. But don't try to oversimplify anything, you know, I mean, because emotions are complicated. God gave us emotion. God gave us feelings, but that's not all he gave us. He gave us our thoughts. He gave us the capacity to move. And all of these things are very helpful to get beyond it. So it's complicated, great stuff, but it's certainly not easier. But I think, again, too, one of the things I'd say is, you know, when we feel stuck, you know, especially in the beginning when you feel like, wow, this is not what I wanted, and you end up and you're divorced, or you just lost a boyfriend. I mean, I see clients who lose a boyfriend or a girlfriend, and they're devastated by it, and they come in for help, which is wonderful. So we're not talking about just a divorce, but a real loss of a relationship. And sometimes when we get stuck, the reason is because we look at our lives where we are, and we think, that's it. This is what my life is going to be in the future. We can't see beyond the hopelessness that we feel. We think, this is what I feel today. And we mistakenly say, this is what I'm going to feel tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And that for sure is not the truth.
Mm-hmm. And I think that is so significant. Like, understanding this may be right now. This may be this moment. This may have been the last 2 weeks, but this does not define my future. This does not define tomorrow. And I think that's really hard in the culture we live in, where we're so tuned into our technology that we're not allowing ourselves out of the rut we're in. And if you could just speak briefly, because we have just a moment here. And if you're just joining me, that's licensed marriage and family therapist, Joe Sikora. He's a Catholic author. You can find him at joesikora.com. That's Joe, S-I-K-O-R-R-A.com. But my question is, if you're going through that divorce, or you're going through the loss, the mourning, and you are walking through this whole process of how to heal from divorce, what is the role of pulling back from technology to allow this process to play out?
Well, I think it's huge. The more studies that come out, the more devastating we see that, you know, social media, how destructive it is to us, to our children for sure, young people, because they're even more immersed in it than if you're, you know, older, middle-aged or whatnot. But you have to step back, because what it does is it distracts you, but not necessarily in a good way. You know, if you are feeling overwhelmed, for instance, or sad, one of the things I'd say is, and this might be really difficult to do, I get that, but I'd say, hey, grab a friend, grab a buddy, and go for a hike, go for a walk, go to the beach, get out in nature and do something. And one of the things that we see with social media is we spend, particularly young people, far less time outside and in nature and engaged in active play and sports and all of this. And the rates of anxiety and depression and suicidal ideation are much higher than they've ever been. I mean, just like every year, it keeps getting worse and worse. So I would say, again, it's a challenge, but set down the phone, set down the social media, and get outside. Because the other thing, not only are you not moving your body when you're on social media, but you're not engaging your spirit. You're making all of these negative associations. You pick it up and you look at your Instagram page or whatever else, and you go, wow, everybody's life looks so great. And then you make that negative comparison. You look at your own life and you say, and my life really stinks right now. I just lost this relationship. I'm in divorce. And so it's hard, because it's not a real indicator of other people's lives and the truth of what other people are living. So setting down the social media is so important, particularly if you're dealing with depression or loss or grief or anger. You got to get outside and have experience God's healthy distraction, which is to be with Him, to be out in nature. And that's what allows us to start moving forward.
That's licensed marriage and family therapist Joe Sikora. If you'd like to ask Joe a question, we have a couple open lines. The phone number is 888-914-9149. You can also ask your question now on social media. Just follow me at Timmerie. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E, where we've also tagged Joe Sikora. You can post that question directly to me on my Instagram story in particular. We'll be right back taking your questions. If you'd like to get in contact with Joe or learn more about his excellent books, one including The Whole World's Going Crazy, But You Don't Have To, go ahead and head over to joesikora.com. That's J-O-E Sikora, spelled S-I-K. O-R-R-A.com. We'll be right back here on Trending, taking your questions.
So, what's trending? Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Ask a Therapist today on Trending. I'm joined by licensed marriage and family therapist and author Joe Sikora, and we're taking your questions. We have a couple open lines. Phone number is 888-914-9149. You can also ask on my Instagram story or other social media platforms. Just find me at Timmerie, T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E, where my producers and I are watching for your questions. Suzanne in Campbell, California is on the line. Susan, welcome to Trending. What's your question for Joe today?
Hi, both of you. Timmerie, I love your show. I'm a fairly new listener, and you just hit on so many wonderful topics. And I've also listened to Joe in the past as well. And so it's an honor to talk to you both.
Thank you. Welcome. How can we help you today?
If you don't mind, I wanted to make a quick comment in regards to the grieving process. And that is, I was divorced like years and years ago. Decades, actually. And I felt so abandoned by God. So I went talk to him. I went pray for his help. Nothing. I felt so abandoned. But I had wonderful people around me who would pray for me. And so it really helped.
Praise God. Mm-hmm. Praise God. It's the importance of a good Catholic friends. Go ahead, Joe, if you had a thought.
Yeah, I mean, Susan, thanks so much for your kind words and checking in here. That's common when we feel this kind of loss. It's really hard to believe, and yet this is what we're called to do, to believe that we have a God who actually is in touch with what we're feeling and cares for us. And I go back, I think about the prophet Jeremiah, who is funny, this friend of mine calls him the weeping prophet. But Jeremiah just struggled with the people. But he said, I know what I'm doing. He was talking about God's promise to the Jewish people, and they were taken into captivity. And God's promise was, I know what I'm doing. I have it planned out for you, plans to take care of you and not abandon you, and plans to give you a future and hope. But I think that sometimes when we feel like our hearts have been taken into captivity, that we're separated from God, separated from our hopes and dreams, we have to go back and in faith say, yep, God knows us, he understands us, and he's speaking to me right now, and he has given us a future. So that's awesome. I'm so glad you've made it through this difficult time, Susan.
Amen. Thank you for that testimony, Susan. I know you had a question as well. How can we help you?
I just wanted to reiterate what you had said before, because it's just so important that people know to keep reaching out. So the reason why I called is, as of tomorrow, my son will be turning 26. He moved away about 4 years ago to the other end of the state, and he's pretty much stopped complete communication with his dad and myself and his sister. He has a job, but he doesn't have enough finances to pay off his bills. So the only time any of us hear from him is when he needs money, but he's so angry and he's so resentful and he's so, so hostile. And I'm doing everything. I've prayed to Padre Pio. I pray to St. Joseph every day. And, you know, I'll do rosaries and like, you know, could you please guide him? And I just don't know what to do. And it's so sad because it's so much emotional and verbal abuse from him that I've really pulled. It sounds like I feel like the worst parent on the planet, is I've pulled back on financially giving him birthday gifts. And it, I know that sounds so horrible, but it's come down to, it just feels like so much emotional abuse through, you know, between his birthdays. And so I don't know what else to do. His dad continues to give him money and give him money. And at the same time, he's being verbally abusive to his dad. I mean, and when I say verbally abusive, I mean like no contact, like no thank yous, nothing. And I don't know what to do, so I'm going to stop. Now you got the whole picture.
Joe, go ahead and check in.
Well, I would say, first of all, don't assume you're the worst mother ever. You know, being a mother, being a father is extraordinarily challenging. And I'm sure you're doing the absolute best you can. Look, I think at some point I was thinking of the prodigal son when you were speaking, and he went off, he left his family, and he made an absolute mess of his life. And I think in your case, what is important to look at, and I would say it's the prodigal father. And in case, you know, you could say the mother, right? You got to just let him go. I don't know why his anger, why he's angry, why he's spiteful. I imagine you've probably asked him and, you know, and maybe he doesn't understand it either. So it's difficult for him to answer. But I think don't lose sight of the power of prayer. And again, just as the prodigal father did, he let his son go off. At some point, we have to allow people to make a mess of their lives and recognize that we don't have the power to make good decisions for them. Even in the most important decision you can think of, the gift of salvation, right, that God offers you and me, he doesn't force himself on us. He says, look, I want to give you everything, including an eternity with me. But if you choose to disregard that, if you choose to walk away, God will let you do that. And I think in a sense, your son is choosing to walk away. You can pray, you can hope, you can believe, but I don't think you have to give him presents or support him financially. I think your job is to open up your arms if and when he comes back so that you can have this conversation, so that you can have the celebration of the reunion of a relationship and say, let's understand this and let's move forward and let's celebrate all the good things that God has given you. But I think some point, the most difficult thing as a parent is to say, I got to let go. What do you think?
Yeah, I have a counselor too, and that's the same thing. And I have friends who are like, oh, how can you do that? And then I have other friends who are like, no, stop, stop giving. And it's just the hardest thing because it's so hard. And there's a lot of guilt with me because when we divorced, and I'm even now, it's like almost, it's 20 some years later, and it's still gut-wrenching to say that word. And he was like six when his world was turned upside down.
Yeah. Yeah, it happens. You know, obviously, no doubt, you know, you probably did the best you could. The relationship didn't work out and everybody suffers. That's frequently what happens. But I think it's also equally important to recognize that although everybody has a unique journey toward healing, healing really is possible. And hopefully, God willing, you know, at some point he recognizes that his anger, that his resentment, that living in the past and the focus on how he was hurt isn't helping him. And he's got to recognize and come to the place on his own where he says, you know what, I've still got a life ahead of me. I'm in my 20s, but I don't want to be angry for the next 50 years. And he's going to have to arrive at that place. And it might be somebody else who tells him that. It might be somebody who says, look, you need to heal from this loss, this relationship, the hurt, the pain that you felt as a child. But that I've worked with a lot of people, you know, who are adults now who live with the pain of divorce. But healing is possible. But they have to make that choice. And that's so tough as a parent. But you've got to allow him to make that choice to move forward with his life.
Amen. Susan, we're praying for you and especially for your son, tomorrow being his birthday here in April. And I'm going to encourage you to have masses offered for him. You know, sometimes I think there's that wound of, okay, well, I'm not giving these gifts in this way, but spend those $10 or whatever that gift is that you give in Thanksgiving to the church to have masses celebrated for your son. Our priest always reminds us there's no greater thing you can do than have masses celebrated for the living especially. And we forget often to do that until we've lost our loved ones. It's Joe Secor, licensed marriage and family therapist here on Trending, taking your questions. Mary from Phoenix called Joe and she said, how does a woman get out of a situation where she's a single Catholic woman but is having an affair with a married Catholic man?
Wow. I wish she had stayed on the line. I would have loved to have had that conversation. I would say, again, great question. Obviously difficult. I'm not going to state the obvious. Well, I will state the obvious. Obviously, she knows that's wrong. She's having an affair. But I would say, now let's move beyond that. I would say, recognize that God has created you to live in love. But not that person. You're moving into a relationship that is flawed from the beginning, that is starting with a lie. You know, you're colluding in a lie when you're having an affair with somebody else who is married. You two are culpable. You're colluding in a lie. And if you said, oh, well, I really love this person. He really loves me, and he's going to leave his wife, and we're going to have a happy marriage. Even if I was not a Catholic, right, and I didn't base my work on this profound belief in God and the principles that God gives us, I would say you're setting yourself up for disaster, because you can't have a relationship that's built and started on a lie. Because you're going to always suspect, well, if he cheated on his wife to be with me, what's to say that he's not going to cheat with somebody else? If this isn't a value, if this isn't a trait that he actually really cares about, to be faithful, to be true, then why should it be any different? So this is a relationship that's probably set up. So the second thing I'd say, and again, it's a great question, I wish I had more time to speak about it. The second thing I'd say is, what are you looking for? I think there's a reason why, if you're getting into a relationship with somebody else's spouse, there's something going on with you. There's some sense of, I don't know what it would be, but you know, you want what you can't have, or you want a relationship that is going to be prone to disaster. So I would look at that as well. And that's probably something that would require the work of a good therapist, you know, to dive into that. Ooh, that was a great question. We could go on with that, couldn't we?
We could, and I would love to jump in, and if you want to dive in after me too, Joan, I just had a couple thoughts, because I get it, like the pain of being single in today's culture, and then whether this is a good, strong Catholic man who is struggling and being pulled down by the temptation of the world and the temptation of you, I'll just say, if you're asking this question, or if you're a Catholic woman, even if you're not, you know better. And you know you are called to so much more. And I'll just share a brief story. When I first started dating my husband, when we were dating, there was a friendship I had with a very, very kind Catholic man. And he kept wanting to have a very close friendship. And it was very clear this wasn't an appropriate friendship to maintain while I was dating someone who, of course, as Catholics, we discern marriage with. And so I had to, unfortunately, really sever that friendship. And I knew, and was, you know, a little frustrated that I knew that it was hurting him. And there was a sorrow because we had had this friendship for a number of years. And it was unfortunate that that was the context. But I also recognized that he had a tendency, and you mentioned this, Joe, for basically wanting to do a dance with what he couldn't have. And that was something very attractive and wooing. And there was almost this experience to him that was so exciting to him. Well, you know what? I'll say this. By the grace of God, I had the strength to say, no, this isn't a friendship I can maintain, and keeping a good balance and distance. But I'll tell you this. By that friendship not being allowed to continue, he went on to see for the first time someone told him no. And he had and entertained relationships with people who had been married. And for the first time, there was that no for him. And he went on to become a Catholic priest. And so what I'm saying is this. There is great temptation. And there's also great attachment sometimes to things that we can't have. But when we have the strength to say no, God has so much better in store. When we have the strength to say no to those temptations, we have the strength, even in the pain and the sorrow and the loss that might no might entail, God has something so much better in store for us. And so just a little testament to that power of saying no, even though there's this attraction, there's this longing, I want to be with someone and I particularly like this person, there's something greater on the other side of that. And that's really what I think. I'd love to hear your thoughts, Joe.
Yeah, I think that's an excellent point. You know, I go back to Genesis. You know, the forbidden fruit was so tempting for Adam and Eve. God said, this one thing you can't have. And yet, that's the one thing they went to have, that forbidden fruit. And there's a reason why, right? There is something attractive about that. Oh, I can't have it. Isn't this exciting? But God set us up to live with something higher in mind, not just to give in to what we want, even if there's a part of us that says, oh, wow, that's so attractive. Wouldn't that be wonderful? But when we live according to his plans, the payoffs are so much more. But you're right. Mm-hmm. At some point, you just have to make that sensible decision and say, nope, can't go there. Not going to. Yep, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
There are a few more questions I really want to make sure that we touch on that came through on social media. And that's a Joe Sikora, licensed marriage and family therapist, author. If you'd like to learn more about him, his work, please check out his books. They're excellent. I read them. Head over to joesikora.com. That's Joe with an E, Sikora spelled S-I-K-O-R-R-A.com. We have just a couple minutes to answer some of these questions real quick. I know that there's some big ones. Ella C on Instagram asks, it sounds like, just for context, it sounds like she recently married and has brought children into her marriage. She said, I'm 33 and my husband is 50. She asks, do I have to introduce my kids to his adult children? I don't want to.
Well, it's a great question. I would say this. His adult children are a part of his life. And although it seems messy, and it is, you know, that's an important part of his life. I don't think he can deny his children. And so if you're now in a relationship with this older man, I think you've bought into the idea that you're going to have some kind of relationship with his adult children, some kind of relationship. It doesn't mean that every Christmas has to be celebrated all together, but I think that's the struggle that you face when you get divorced and remarried or marry somebody with other kids is like, now how do we navigate that? And it's difficult, but my tendency would be to say, yeah, this is important to him, his children. You need to get into that world somewhat.
And do you trust your husband? If your husband thinks that, and you married him for a reason, if your husband thinks maybe one of his kids shouldn't be introduced to yours, he'll say that, and navigating what that relationship. If you married him, hopefully you trust him enough to help navigate this transition as well. As Joe Sikora here on Trending. Joe, we have a few more questions. Do you have time to stick with us through the break for a couple minutes?
Of course. Sure, absolutely.
Wonderful. We'll be right back taking your questions today on Trending with Timory with licensed marriage and family therapist Joe Sikora. These are some great ones, so don't go away. It might just be the little bit of help and advice you need as well to hear.
We're talking about what you're thinking about. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Ton of questions for licensed marriage and family therapist Joe Sikora today on Trending. We'll throw a little bit lighter of a topic for a moment to catch our breath here. Jack on Facebook asked Joe, I'm wondering or considering pursuing my master's in marriage and family therapy, and I'm wondering if you have any suggestions on what Christian, ideally Catholic-based master's in marriage and family therapy programs you would recommend. He said, I live in the western suburbs of Chicago.
I have no idea about the schools there and what to attend. But I think there's a lot of good schools. Don't look for that perfect school where you're going to be, you know, get everything that you hope to get, you know, strengthened in your faith and given all the answers. It's a challenging field. I think sometimes it's interesting. I see a young guy right now who's in school to become a therapist. And his biggest challenge is seeing and working with people who are living lives and making decisions that are so far out of his faith. It's a challenge for him. But God calls us to walk into the darkness, to be a light. And sometimes you've got to be willing to walk into the darkness of people's lives so that you can be that light. And so I'd say rather than focusing on what is the right school, I would focus on that journey within your own heart, using your faith to strengthen you so that you can go out into the world where there's so much darkness and be that strength, that light for other people. But I have no idea what school that would be.
The only thing that comes to mind that might have online programs is Divine Mercy. I can't remember what it used to be called, out in, I think, Washington, D.C. If they have online programs, if you're interested in online learning, I'm personally not an online learner, so that's okay. But I will link to it that you can find them at divinemercy.edu. I know they have great programs in therapy, and they used to have PhD programs as well, I believe. So I'll toss that out there for one recommendation. Again, we'll include it in the link for the show notes as well as on social media. Let's see. An anonymous question came in on social media. How do I handle my pull to enroll kids in Catholic school? She said, I'm willing to make sacrifices for it, but my husband says no because money's too tight. He isn't Catholic and doesn't understand the importance of it. Now I feel myself pulling away from him and resenting him.
Well, I think the most important thing, I went to both Catholic school and public school. And I personally felt like, boy, when I went to public school, I was overjoyed because I thought, oh, I actually don't have to work and I can get really good grades. That was my experience. So I love my Catholic education. But going back to that particular situation, I would say the most important thing in your life, believe it or not, isn't whether or not your kids go to Catholic school. It's wonderful if you can do it, if you can afford it. It was great education, great spiritual development. But your family matters a lot. Your kids are going to learn more about faith, your Catholic faith, by how you treat your spouse, by the love that you have in your family. So I would make that the highest priority, to really focus on your marriage, to make it healthy and strong and loving and joyful. And if you're doing that, you know, other things hopefully will work out. That would be my quick response.
And I'll just throw in there, why not consider homeschooling or an abridged version? Colby Academy is actually one of our sponsors here at Relevant Radio. We love them, and they have programs where parents are fully hands-on, textbook, programs that are hybrid, partially online. So that's an option. Also, you have some great charter schools that have faith-based elements. I know Hillsdale College, and there are even some other Catholic versions as well that have a little bit of the best of both worlds. So I would look into those, especially as we're looking into the next school year coming up. There are some great resources, but I'll include a link, and you can find it online as well, my social media show notes, relevantradio.com/Colby. That's Colby, K-O-L-B-E. It's something to entertain as well, a different option, and it might not be the homeschooling that you think of. Homeschooling's come a long ways, and there are many ways to go about homeschooling. Okay, Martha's on the line in California. Martha, welcome to Trending. What's your question for Joe today?
So I was... I recently got separated about 7 months ago, and it was kind of a one-sided separation. Basically, I don't want to be married anymore after being married for 28 years and 5 kids. And I'm trying to have reconciliation, and it just seems like it's not there on the other side. I made the vows till death do us part, for better, for worse. When do you know that it's just time to let go?
Well, I'm so sorry for your struggle. I know how devastating that is after bringing children into the world, the life that you created, to lose that. So your pain is real. I would say start with that. Acknowledge your pain. It's not about so much letting go. I'm letting go of this marriage. I would say let go of the idea that you can control what happens. You can only control the decisions that you make, what you're going to do. You can only control focusing on your healing. If your husband says, no way, I'm not doing it, I'm out of here, you can't stop that. But you can focus on your own mental, spiritual, emotional health. And that's what I would focus on. It's not about letting go so much. It's about really embracing what you can do to move your life forward. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I mean, I started going to counseling, but it's like, I don't know. It's just, I'm in the whole denial stage of he's going to come back, when he comes back, how, you know, and I just don't see myself putting my kids through this. You know, you listen to all the things that divorce causes. I mean, my children are older. And I have one that's a teenager, but it's just so hard to just imagine, because, you know, we've been through a lot, we've worked through a lot, and now it's just, I just don't want to be married anymore.
Yeah, it's tough. There's no easy answers. I think continue to embrace your faith, recognize that you're loved by God. Anything can happen. You know, you don't want to go back to the pain that existed in the marriage. But the question is, what if it could be something different? I'm not saying it's going to be. I'm no prophet. But, you know, if you could go back to a relationship that was healed, that was loving, that was tender, then I would suggest you probably would go back to that. The idea of going back to the dysfunction, of course, that's not inviting. But God actually offers something else. As impossible as it sounds, it is possible.
Hmm. Martha, I want to invite you to read a book. Read a book by Layla Miller. She compiled the story of a number of couples who were exactly where you are at. The book's called Impossible Marriages Redeemed. They didn't end the story in the middle. The stories are awe-inspiring. They are painful. And I hope you'll read the book and see how they navigated similar situations as people of faith, people with adult children, people with young children. All these different stories are there. But I want to challenge you. There's this trend today of Catholics who have been in these marriages for years separating. Don't let the devil into the details. Don't let the devil determine how you perceive your spouse. I want to encourage you to fight. Go to confession. Stay in a state of grace and pray. Pray for your spouse as you go through this. And check out that book, Impossible Marriages Redeemed. They didn't end the story in the middle. Martha, if you'll hold on, we'd love to take the name of your husband and your children as well so that we can pray for you here at Relevant Radio. I'll be praying for you as well as Joe. Joe, thank you for joining me today. If you'd like to learn more about Joe, check out joesecora.com. We're posting a link to joesecora.com in the episode notes as well as on social media. This is Timory from Trending with Timory. So-called medical assistance in death is suicide, plain and simple. How do you convince the next generation that life is worth living? Meanwhile, everywhere from California to Denmark and Canada to the Netherlands endorses death by suicide of the suffering and the young. Life is worth living and celebrating. How do we bring hope to a generation that is missing hope? Join me Thursday on Trending, 6 p.m. Central on Relevant Radio.